All right, we're going to do our second live video for today. I think it'll be the last video I do because I have a lot of work to do. But just a few things that I want to talk to you guys about. I have one piece of advice that I kind of thought was interesting, and I kind of refreshed my memory when I was in Hobart, Indiana. I was hanging out with Kenny Williams. He's a fucking beast out there, guys. He's a killer. He's a crusher. God, you would not believe the stuff that he's picking up off the highway. It's wild, wild, really good stuff. Kenny, you know you're a killer. Don't pretend like you're not. We come on here and deploy humility. He's a very humble guy. Actually, everybody in Hobart had wonderful things to say about him. Nobody had a bad word to say. The guy is a interdiction fucking kingpin out there. So the one thing I can tell you is that when we went into his unmarked car, so that he had a radar unit and he has it mounted. So when he sits, traffic's coming this way, he's sitting this way so he can watch traffic as it comes along. And at a point when they're coming down the highway, they're going to see him and have a reaction to his presence. And one of the things we talked about, him and I, was, well, it was actually during class. The highway that he works on is a 70-mile-an-hour highway. So what he looks for, one of his signals is somebody may be doing 73 or 74 and dropping it down to like 68, 65, 63. And he said it takes about a third of the mile up the roadway is when the people first notice him and see him and begin to have a reaction to his presence. Now, it's hard to notice somebody from a third of a mile up the roadway how much they're decreasing speed, especially if they're just letting off the gas, maybe lightly tapping the brake. You can't see their brake lights a third of a mile or even half a mile down the road. But one thing you could do is employ your radar unit to determine what kind of speed they're doing. I can tell you that people will try to, I've had guys say things like, well, how do you know they're not using a radar detector? Like, we want them to see you. So it's okay if they are using a radar unit or a radar detector. But, you know, when you have somebody decreasing speed from about 73 down to about 68, you're not going to see things like the whole back lift up and the nose dip forward in the car. You're not going to see all that happen when you have somebody doing 90 miles an hour in a 70 and they see you and they, bam, they hit the brakes and the whole car lifts up and, you know, drive fast, jam the brakes real hard and see how the car, you'll see the nose dip. You'll actually see the lights dip down and the back end of the car pick up. You won't see that when it's just subtle, but those are the subtle things you need to pick up on. Because the question is if a guy's doing 73 and a 70 and he spots you and he brings it down to 64, those are the kind of cars that we have interest in. And that's how Kenny says that what he looks for. He has that radar canted so he can pick up people. And it's not going to work with a laser gun because you have to constantly drop that dot and pick up signals. You want a constant evaluation of how fast the car is going. And the only way right now that I know that you can achieve that is by running your radar unit and picking up on those subtle changes. Not everything's going to be so dramatic. You must pay attention when you're on the road to the subtle changes that people are having when they cite you as a law enforcement officer. It's not going to be super dramatic. Sometimes it is dramatic, but most of the time it's subtle. They're trying to lay low. They're trying to keep it cool, but shit's going to happen. They're going to have an automatic reaction. They're nervous. They're engaged prior to, during, or after the commission of a crime. Something's going to happen here. Every time I pass a cop car, I think about how would I feel? I'm reverse engineering the thoughts of a criminal, somebody who's not only trafficking, but they've been doing a lot of different things. So that's my advice for you to pay attention to. If you're going to use, don't be afraid to use the radar unit to turn it on. Nobody's telling you that you have to listen. And I've said this 100 times, probably 1,000 times. Tickets and interdiction don't go hand in hand. You'll use your tickets or whatever, your written warnings to justify your stop. And, you know, it's PC you're going to add into your case and you're going to write your tickets and all that jazz. But I'm not telling you to go out and get people kept, you know, listen, don't waste your time with people flying down the roadway. They're not. If you're trying to do interdiction work and trying to arrest criminals and apprehend people engaged in criminal activity, and however taboo this may sound to some folks, this is the success method to employing this and getting better arrests. I mean, there's a reason why guys are putting videos and pictures up of the things they've experienced as a result of employing these techniques. There's a reason why people are allowed to go out and pretext cars and do that and have really... Do you think that Ken Williams and TJ and Brad and all these guys and Sean Pardesi, do you think they go out and they run a radar unit and try to catch people? Or they like, well, it didn't stop that car because I only had a minor violation. Minor in your mind, but it's a big violation for people who are doing interdiction work. People are just not going to be engaged in high speed, crazy driving when they're committing a crime. It's just the way it is. So if you're hypocritical to that, that's fine. You can watch these videos, but you can't cast an opinion because you don't know what you're talking about. And you know what, listen, in every class, there's somebody who does interdiction. There are a couple, handful of guys. There's a lot of people obviously there to learn, and they agree. We all agree. We're all on the same page, same tactics. The guys who are the most successful, and girls, I know there's a lot of successful female interdiction officers. Everybody, every police officer who's successful at, you know, getting drugs and guns and stolen items and kidnappings and stolen cars, they, right, Rick, they try to hide from us. And this is the stuff that we use. This is the stuff that's employed. It is what it is. So the other question I have is this, and I can't say his name, so I'm going to read this to you. Whenever I find that a car and get that reaction to make sure to pull occupants out and separate them and ask those questions and build RAS, on occasion, I've had drivers and passengers immediately stonewall any friendly or even direct questions about activities associated with passengers. Though it is suspicious, I am told by other officers and even supervisors that because people have the right to not answer any questions and just pass their information and be on their way, it is not appropriate to use their reserve and what's your probable cause attitude considered reasonable suspicion. What was your strategy and approach to this behavior when you wanted to get into a car, but no information was provided? Here's my advice to you. A, you have to have administrative support. If you have supervisors and coworkers that understand what kind of work you're doing, they're going to say, look, this is a tactic used by somebody who is engaged in criminal activity. How do we approach this? As long as everybody there is not Monday morning quarterbacking, what your reasonable suspicion is. Remember, your reasonable suspicion starts the point when the person cites you as a law enforcement officer. A lot of things happen prior to that stop. You need to be able to document those things. Like, just like I talked about, if you're working a 70-mile-an-hour zone, they're doing 73. Now they drop it down to 64 and a 73 for no reason. Maybe a change of lanes for no apparent reason. Maybe you're pulling off the roadway. Maybe you've stopped them somewhere. Nothing makes sense, but they don't want to talk to you. As long as you don't have a supervisor who's going to be antagonistic or coworkers that are giving you a hard time or administration that doesn't understand what you're trying to do, the only way to figure this out, if you have somebody who's not cooperating enough, somebody who's going to talk to you, is to call for a canine unit to the scene. You may want to advise them, hey, I understand you don't want to talk to me. This is providing me a ton of suspicion that there may be something illegal in this car. So just so you know, we'll be calling, contacting a canine unit to arrive to the scene. But again, you have to have somebody who's going to say, if that person is just breaking balls, you may have people breaking balls and some people who are engaged in criminal activity using a tactic to get you away from them. And most cops will get frustrated with that, not roll with it. So before you do anything, you have to know that you have administrative support where you're going to say, hey, guys, if this happens, we're going to call for a dog. This is a tactic that people use to try to hide stuff. That dog shows up. That dog indicates on the car. Well, then you don't have to talk to anybody because they have probable cause to search the car. That's probably the only way you're going to be able to do anything with that vehicle. But you're going to have an administration that understands that you're going to be calling for a canine unit. And this is the reason why, and that's how you're going to approach it. And if they won't want to do it, and they don't want to have your back, what can I tell you? What can I tell you? So, you know, that's unfortunately, that's some people's dilemmas. And you can be critical about this advice all you want, whoever's watching this video, it's the truth. Like we go back to, some people don't like hearing the truth, but this is the truth. This reflects poorly on who you are. Whoever's watching this doesn't like it. It's still the truth. I'm not pushing opinions here. It's not an agenda-based video that I give to everybody. The truth is the truth. We're banking on the fact that some folks don't like it, who maybe have sit higher on the totem pole. But guess what? There's 12,000 people in this group. You guys are all the future of law enforcement, and you guys are all chiefs, captains, lieutenants, and sergeants. And within some time, you're going to understand the frustrations. You'll hear this advice, and then you guys will get promoted. And then I'll just move up in the, I guess, more accepted, because there's a new school way thing. That you have to be savvy. You have to be smart. Things aren't the way they used to be. This guy's told me from New Hampshire. Is somebody calling from New Hampshire from this group? I'm doing a friggin' video. All right, so the second question is, can you explain the case law that touches on canines and prolonged stop? Other issues explained, I'm sorry, experiences, supervisors stating that if we have to wait for more than 20, 30 minutes for a dog, that it prolongs the stop would be deemed as such in court, even though the dog was called within the first 10 minutes of the stop. Our town does not have a canine unit, so we often rely on surrounding towns or the sheriff's department. Again, I know your take on fighting supervisors, which I agree, which is don't fight your supervisors. I'm not telling you to. They might not like this. This discussion and this conversation, because it's antagonistic and it's it's aggravating to hear the truth. But again, you pat me on the back, guys who don't want their people doing things. I'm telling you, don't. If they're saying no, they're your bosses. You got to listen to them. Don't be the guy who's going to change things. If they don't want, you can't sell the unsellable. I've said this 100 times. You cannot sell the unsellable. Okay. I know your take is not fighting supervisors, blah, blah, blah. I just feel if armed with good case law and explaining your training, many would see the justification. I make sense. There's no debating the fact that I make sense. I do. We take case law, it's interpreted correctly, and it's put out on here. Now, are there some folks who watch these videos or read the case law and don't know how to understand what they're talking about? I always tell you, when you're reading case law, make sure that you're looking for the questions that are being posed and the answers that the court's providing to you. For example, you could read State versus Pierce 1994, and you have to understand the question was, can police arrest in New Jersey, arrest people under the provisions of Chapter 3, Chapter 4, Title 39? And it said yes and no. Yes, when we don't know who they are and they're subject to a summons, and no, just for any reason, you just can't just stop locking people up. When you have a license, you know who they are, you run them, and maybe they use a turn signal. Like, you can't bring people to jail for something so silly, but maybe you have that same guy who didn't use his turn signal, and now you don't know who he is. You can't find him in the database. He's posing bullshit answers to your questions, doesn't know his social, all this stuff. You could read that case law and certainly get screwed up and mixed up in it. And you may have people that want to jump in with each other and try to, well, no, well, we both agree. You both agree because you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But certainly, I have this like secret wish that everybody who had something to say about the things that I'm talking about would go live with me in front of a studio audience from like 300 cops, bring all the naysayers up and sit down and have a panel. And we'd have to have arbitrators that actually know what they're talking about. And to be honest with you, the guys who have something to say about the stuff that we're doing in this group, they don't ever come to my face. Nobody ever says to my face. I can hear from your coworkers and your subordinates and your higher ups and guys higher than you and tell me that they're this guy below you thinks it, but nobody wants to call and talk. Everybody wants to throw mud and run. But the truth is true. Can't change it. So, dude, here's what I'm going to tell you regarding this. If you have reasonable suspicion, 20 to 30 minutes prolonging for a dog is fine. You may have an issue with 2 to 3 hours waiting for a dog, but 20 to 30 minutes, brother, I've had people waiting for an hour and 45 minutes and it wasn't challenged in court. I don't know why everybody's playing Monday morning quarterback. If they have a good spine and they're ready to take on the question to the answers of, I'm sorry, the answers to the questions of, well, he made us stay on the side of the road for 20, 30 minutes waiting for a dog. Well, sir, you had the right to consent to search. He built up his reasonable suspicion. He had the right to call for a canine unit. You had the right. If you had to leave so badly, you could have gave consent. If you have an agency that's going to go, they're going to tuck their wiener in between the legs and go, you're right. We should never do things like that. Although he found a kilo, this was crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to have that support. You have to have people that are going to understand what you're doing. If you don't get that, what can I tell you, man? You have to have administration with a spine. You have to have administration that knows what they're talking about. You have to have administration that's going to provide air cover for you. And for the administrators who don't watch this and think that it's wrong to say this, it's just the truth. There's a lot of chiefs, deputy chiefs, captains that I'm friends with all over the state, all over the country, that provide a lot of air cover for their men and women going out doing good police work. Because they know what it is, they like it, and they understand we still have a job to do as police officers, even in modern day society. So, you know, I get there's problems with the world, but you can't hide and fake the truth. I have to tell you, brother, if they're not going to have your back, you know, what can I tell you? Don't do that kind of work where you work. There was a good post about reading Miranda after you have odor and a stop before asking if there's anything in the car. Good subject to review. Okay, would you like me to review it? In New Jersey, Jim, I think I spoke about this yesterday's video. This goes to Jim Pestless. Somebody else just commented something. We'll get to you in a second. Let me review that. In New Jersey, under State versus George Myers and State versus Judge, and now State v. Houston, and they talk about and State versus all these other cases. In New Jersey, when you smell like marijuana, you're subject to arrest. You can be arrested and charged with possession of CDS. It satisfies the in-presence requirement. Again, I'm just going off the cuff off the top of my head. It satisfies the in-presence requirement that a DP offense occurred in the officer's presence. odor of marijuana on your clothing, says, hey, the court said, you smell like weed, you smoked weed or you had weed on you, that's a crime. You can be charged. People do it. There's 15,000 guys and girls in this state who have charged people with the odor of marijuana for under 50. Because you can arrest for that in this state. And technically, if you really think about it, there's an AG guideline called the Statewide Narcotics Action Plan, the SNAP program, right? In Directive 2.2, it says that all officers shall arrest for the odor of marijuana, for any CDS offense, unless it causes some kind of public safety issue or ongoing investigation. So every time somebody smells like weed, if you really think about it, every time somebody smells like weed and you don't make an arrest, you're violating the AG guideline 2.2. Argue that. So when you argue that you can't, there's no way, he says you could do it, you don't have to believe me. Read the fucking case law. It's the truth. Every time you're not arresting somebody, they smell like weed, you're violating the AG guideline, the Statewide Narcotics Action Plan. Every time you're writing something in a report that the guy smelled like weed and you didn't arrest him, you're violating the Statewide Narcotics Action Plan. I'm not making it up. Unless there's some kind of addendum they made to that program. So, because you can be arrested on the odor of marijuana, when you pull somebody over and you begin to pose questions regarding the smell, and you're posing questions designed to elicit incriminating statements, you're going to have to read Miranda because those statements are going to be suppressed. Because although you didn't arrest them, or cuffs weren't put on, or you didn't tell them you were under arrest, in the eyes of the court, they're going to deem that at the point where they were arrestable and Miranda kicked in. It's just good advice. You may not like it. We've done it 100 fucking times. Like, I get it. I know. Do you think this is a perfect judicial system where you have defense attorneys who know what they're talking about? Prosecutors know what they're talking about? Like, did you see the post earlier? Prosecutor told one of our guys in this group that when they smell marijuana in a car, it's good to search it because it provides reasonable suspicion. This is a county level prosecutor. And I actually saw the text back and forth, and it's comical, right? We all know that you need PC to search a car, except the prosecutor doesn't know that. So it's an imperfect system. If you get to a defense attorney that doesn't know what they're talking about and they see this stuff, well, it's gone through 100 times. Okay. What if you hit that one time and you get something really good and a good attorney shows up and knows what he's talking about and your stuff gets suppressed? Then you're going to learn your tough lesson. All right. So I think that's it. Shit, went on for a while there. Somebody commented something. Let me just see if I can find it before we get up. So, dude, that's your answer to your questions there. It really just comes down to your administration being educated and understanding. And there's plenty of case law. Again, it goes up to 75 minutes on a U.S. federal standard. But again, if you need to hold property, I'm going to go to this case real quick as we're right here. Let's see what I got here. I'm going to put the wording up on this, but if you need to hold property versus holding a body, it's very different things. You can release somebody and hold their property. You need a reasonable suspicion to hold property. But if you feel like you're now infringing on somebody's right to leave because you're waiting for a canine, you can always tell somebody they can leave the scene, but you're leaving your car. I'll pull that case up. I'm actually going to drop a lot of verbiage from that case because I know we had a conversation about last week regarding how long you can wait for a dog and can you hold somebody's car waiting for that canine unit to arrive? And I pulled up some stuff. I thought I had some things, and I kind of wasn't prepared to engage in that conversation, but I think I'm gonna be a little more prepared today and kind of state my facts and my points of view. So with that being said, should be back here tomorrow. Hopefully it's provided some value to you guys. See you later. Come to Atlantic City. Oh yeah, the March class. You try to get to Bergen County? The 13th and the 14th. We've got a lot of room. It's a makeup class. We've got a lot of room in that class. So sign up if you're trying to get before the summer. We won't be back to Bergen County until September. So if you're in Bergen County, you want to try to come to the training, that's the time it's going to be. See you guys later.